You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. And if you like it, please consider becoming a patron. This is the last section to be read in the book Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science by Rudolf Steiner, Collected Works, Volume 316. And these have all been translated by Christian von Arnim. This is an addendum to the Easter Course for Physicians, an evening meeting with young physicians in Dornach on the 24th of April, 1924. Rudolf Steiner gave the following answer in response to a question about the apprehension of the fluid human being through imaginative perception. Well, now, you will not manage very well if you start with the details and not with the general. It really is necessary that you start with such observations from the universal, and above all, follow up the things meditatively which I have already spoken about. You see, if we look at the general context we have in nature, I am only speaking about the things which must gradually lead to an imaginative conception. We have in nature the form of the drop. It is normally considered in such a way that we think of the drop as being held together from the inside, but that is not necessary. We can also think of the drop as being formed from all sides, from the outside. Then we have, in the surface of the drop, the oneness of the cosmic dimension. You also, of course, have to consider in these things that the imaginative conception must aim for the truth, and that current ideas which we bring with us from a general education depart as far as is possible from the truth. People imagine today that there is infinite space with the stars scattered inside it. Well, starting with such a conception means taking nothing into account in the most brutal way, other than merely what has been thought up. Just take the report in all the papers recently, which should be taken more seriously than we think, how it was shown that beyond a certain distance from the earth, the cosmos is no longer a void, but filled with solid crystallized nitrogen. As you can see, things are still so uncertain today that such a view is quite possible. Well, of course, that is not the case either, but we can nevertheless see from these things the superficial nature of the assumptions which have been made from observation. Because today a person can decide one fine day to imagine that we live here like in an emptied-out space, which has the slightly solidified earth at the center, and around that the solidified nitrogen which gives us the impression of the starry sky. That is, of course, also nonsense. But in my view, it is indeed the case that people can truly imagine all kinds of things, which accord with external information about the real makeup of the cosmos. Well, it is in fact the case that this report about the crystallized nitrogen might well be an April Fool's joke, but many people will believe it. It is almost no more stupid to believe such a report than it is to adhere to what is generally assumed to be the case today. And it is brutal materialism to adopt the general assumptions of today, because in reality the cosmos acts like a hollow sphere, and as if forces were entering everywhere from the periphery. It is indeed true that we are dealing with formations which are firmly configured in themselves from outside in, and which can only be modified, differentiated, in accordance with the stars, so that we already have an original picture of what in turn goes on inside us in the configuration of the visible stars. Thus we come to an imagination through this conception showing the human head. Now, having observed the human head, look at the bird, the way the bird is built. We look at the way the bird is built, and specifically its skeleton, in the wrong way if we simply compare it with a whole human being or a whole animal. You can really only compare the way the bird is built if you want to compare it at all with the human head. We have to imagine that we have a modified bird structure in the human head, and that the bird has the rest of its body as short appendages in a variety of ways. The legs are always atrophied in birds. Now, imagine the drop, formed in such a way that you stretch it into a cylinder. See plate 18. If you extend the drop into a cylinder, and imagine that what has been differentiated into the head from out of the cosmos remains, but that it continues to be modified in a great variety of ways because you have extended it into a cylinder, then you have the torso part of the human being. In order to imagine the torso part of the human being, we have to think of the callot as atrophied. But then you have to imagine that when you have the cylinder and invaginate it here, then you have the third stage. Then you have the limb part of the human being. It is, however, the case that you first get the limb part of the human being such that you get what I have drawn here in the arms. So you have to imagine that you extend, and in that way first get the arms, and that the second extension is formed through a second image being created from inside, which originates from the moon. But ignore the arms for the sake of simplicity. So, you go from the sphere to an extension, and then to invagination. If you become used to creating images in this way, through extension and invagination, you are at the beginning of what you really require to familiarize the soul with working in the imaginative realm. Because all organized life really consists of extension and invagination. And just consider how wonderful that is. So, think that I imagine a sphere, and then an extended sphere. That is the extension upward caused by the surroundings. If you think here of the earth with its forces as the counter-image of the surroundings, then you have the earth below human beings as the thing which invaginates them. Toward the top, the cosmos extends. Toward the bottom, the earth invaginates. So that you have the image fetched out of the cosmos and the human being invaginated by the earth. So you can now, through imagination, answer the question, what would happen if the earth were not below you and the starry heavens above you? So if you want to develop imaginations, you never just restrict yourself to remodeling the human being like this, but you have to become used to seeing all of the cosmos as a whole in the transition from the solid to the fluid, and gradually to imagine less fixed, sharp contours. The fluid is always fighting against the solid and attempting to integrate it into the flow, the stream of the whole cosmos. And that is how you get to seeing such extension and invagination everywhere. You get to seeking the counter-images everywhere. As you know, in embryology, we never have any indication as to why things develop the way they do. Embryologists start with the egg cell, proceed to the cell cluster, see that invagination suddenly occurs, and the gastrula is created. That, too, you must imagine as the opportunity being created for the cosmos to work on the one hand, where we have the surface, and that the earth can work where there is invagination. Rudolf Steiner draws, see plate 19. Take an epidermal cell that is located near the surface. This is something you have everywhere. There is now a cell close to the surface. The earth principle, which causes invagination, continues its influence in the human being. And so these earth principles are also continuing to be active everywhere. Because of this, there is always a tendency to direct the fluid principle in the human being so that it always moves on in this way, and an invagination follows. Invagination pushing in more, invagination pushing in more. It goes into all kinds of directions. Now, imagine something fluid in motion which solidifies. Then look at any organ from this perspective. You can see how it has rigidified, solidified, become invaginated everywhere. And on the other hand, notice how it is everted. And so you get to the shape of the organs and to a view of how the forces work from all different sides. And you can trace all these organs back to a single form. You only have to be clear that you must start from a very specific point, from the sculptural element. Now, you have already pointed out that the forms should be understood through sculpting, but try actually creating a feeling of that for yourselves with a malleable, soft material, taking the material here on the one side and pushing the clay in that direction with the other hand. Then try and see what develops. You will get a feeling that empty space is pure nonsense. Space is differentiated everywhere by its forces, and in this way you will gradually learn to understand all that is sculptural. Now, if you want to understand the human being in sculptural terms, you also, of course, have to be able to go to extremes. I can begin by imagining the sphere here. I imagine that the sphere is expanded on the one side and invaginated on the other. But now imagine that you go further and invaginate here, so far, that it goes beyond the expanded part. Then you get this kind of structure, indeed two structures. But now think further that these structures are not just at work on the one side. Imagine you expand, invaginate, then an additional invagination from below and expansion upward. Then if you do that three times, you get the three-dimensional form of the two lungs. In this way, you can gradually obtain a view of how the whole of the human being is inwardly connected with such forces. And then you move on to the following. That is a very important idea, the pathological and therapeutic significance of which will only become apparent when the book which Dr. Wegmann is editing appears. The relationship between the finished organ and organ function will become clear there for the first time. Take organ function. Organ function is constant fluctuation which is kept in a fluid state. The same thing that has completed the organ also produces its activity, so that we can say, what is the movement of the juices in the stomach? It is the same thing kept in a fluid state as what the stomach itself is in its solid state. Think of it as frozen movement of the juices. Then you have the stomach itself. If that were not the case, it would not be possible at all to cure any organ. You cannot act on the solid organ, only on the fluctuating organ. Salicylic acid acts in the same way as the human kidneys. If similarly I administer salicylic acid in equisetum to a person, I establish a phantom kidney in the area where his kidneys are. This phantom then replaces the astral activity in that location. The latter pushes out the old kidney substance and allows new kidney substance to be formed from out of what is in flow, as also happens in any case after about 7 to 8 years. The whole business is speeded up by generating such a phantom. We have to understand that everywhere where there is an organ, we also constantly have such organ-forming activity, and this always solidifies into the organ. That is how you get into the fluid human being. But then there is still another thing. Then you have to be able to advance to the idea, when I look at the solid human being, I get those nice little pictures in the anatomy books. After all, what we see there is only 10% of the human being. That's just how it is. As long as I look at those fixed contours in the human being, then liver equals lung, lung equals lung, stomach equals stomach. But if I... Let me read that again. Then liver equals liver, lung equals lung, stomach equals stomach. But if I then move over to the fluid human being, I can find how this fluid stream is particularly concentrated in, let us say, the liver, and is occupied with building a liver out of the fluid. but each organ always wants to become the whole human being. In the fluid human being, that is in fact present as a tendency in each organ, so that we have to imagine the following. If I remove the liver, it remains a liver. But if I were to take out the fluid out of which the liver is formed, it would have the tendency to become the whole human being. That is what we have to imagine in our imagination. On the other hand, the tendency to take on contours, on the other hand, to penetrate everything, everywhere. That is simply how it is, if we are serious about such things. The meditation formulas contain the beginnings for you to be able gradually to tell yourself the things I am telling you. Everything contains the beginnings to get into the imagination itself. Anyone who starts to meditate has great inner pleasure in meditating to begin with, but at a certain point, when the matter begins to become serious, something rebels because the matter becomes incredibly complicated. If we fail to approach meditation with exceptional seriousness, then we are in the same position as someone who is seeking Lucifer but receives an image of Ahriman. Then the effect of meditation is such that we get the opposite of what we are striving for. The person who seeks Ahriman is given an image of Lucifer. That is the problem. People lose patience and don't stick with it. It is not about time, but about the intensive application of patience. Then 5 minutes can, under certain circumstances, be a long time for meditation. But whether we lose patience in 6 months or 5 minutes comes to the same thing. You must have the patience, and then you will see how you begin to understand things and how you can move from the solid human being to the fluid human being. But then you need the musical principle when you move to the aeriform human being. In that situation, you have to understand the respiratory processes, and if you really meditate, then you will become aware of your breathing. The astral, aeriform human being takes shape inwardly. And, you see, then you have to develop a sense for the following. Human beings actually go through the world without any self-knowledge. Now they learn to sense themselves with their breathing. If we are in the habit of thinking mathematically or quantitatively, one of the things that occurs at the very beginning is that it suddenly occurs to us to say, am I three halves? You get the feeling as if you were three halves. Why is that so? It is so because we begin to sense through the breathing that on the one side we have a lung divided into three lobes, and on the other side one divided into two lobes. And so in this way, by experiencing the inner structures as proportions, we can rise to the astral and aeriform. And if we can listen very precisely to ourselves in speaking, that is the way to study the eye organization properly. You can also find the eye organization, at first through meditation and then rising to a real understanding, by taking a mammal, say a dog, a skeleton, and studying first the posterior part and then the anterior part very intensively. The one is just the modification of the other. Then you have to progress to the cosmic and imagine the posterior form as having been created by the moon forces and the anterior form by the sun forces. And thus you have to imagine how the sun looks at the moon, and then you have the posterior part of the animal in the moon side and the anterior part of the animal in the sun side. And then you have to think of the modification of sun and moon leading to upright posture in human beings, and thus you obtain the transformation. The whole matter is relocated by one level, and that is another way to reach the eye organization. But this is how you have to proceed. The spatial has to disappear in the sculptural in the musical, and the musical in what is meaningful. If you proceed in this way, you are looking at it from a general perspective, and that is actually the healthier way, because otherwise you end up in total confusion. You do have to start from these principles and not from the details. That's the end of the addendum. And there is a meditation after this. and I'm going to read that and include it. Preparation. How do I find the good? Number one, can I think the good? I cannot think the good. Thinking is taken care of by my etheric body. My etheric body works in the fluids of the physical body. So, I will not find the good in the fluids of my physical body. Number two, can I feel the good? I can feel the good, but it is not there through me when I only feel it. Feeling is taken care of by my astral body. My astral body works in the aeriform parts of my body, so I will not find the good existing through me in the aeriform parts of the body. Number three, can I will the good? I can will the good. The will is taken care of by my eye. My eye works in the warmth ether of my physical body, so I can physically realize the good in warmth. I feel my humanity in my warmth. And again, another set, number one, I feel light in my warmth. Parenthesis, ensure that this feeling of light occurs in the region where the physical heart is located. Close parenthesis. Number two, I feel the substance of the world resound in my warmth. Parenthesis, ensure that this particular feeling of sound goes from the abdomen to the head, but also spreads to the whole of the physical body. And there's a drawing. End of parenthesis. Number three, I feel in my head cosmic life stirring in my warmth. Parenthesis, ensure that the particular feeling of life spreads from the head to the whole of the physical body. Close parenthesis. And there's a picture. And this was for Helena von Grunelius, autumn 1923. That is the end of the meditation. And that is the end of the book, translated by Christian von Arnim, Collected Works, volume 316, entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science.